I was a little fast on that, so I'll wait a second. There we go. We're going to call to order the meeting for the Senate Committee on Rural Communities and Economic Development. It's April 2nd, 2013. And before we get started, we're going to do an introduction of a bill so we can get it moving into the process. We have a winery bill that we're coming, so I'll open a work session for the introduction of a legislative concept.
Chair Roblin, I move that LC 3857, dated 3/29/13, be introduced as a committee bill.
Senator Bertschinger moves that LC 3857, dated 3/29/13, be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? And I will state it because we haven't done this for a long time. The introduction of a bill does not indicate whether you're for it or against it. It just gets it into the play. And is there any, seeing no discussion? Is there anyone who disagrees with this?
There's none. Objects? No.
Objects? We will send it on, and it is introduced as a bill, and I'm going to sign it right now so that we can get it on its way. And we'll close our work session on the introduction of bills. We have another bill, 605, which we have a work session for. We don't have all the paperwork, so we're leaving that to the end. If it makes it today and we have time, we'll do that. But we have another bill and a lot of people here today, and it's exciting to have that. So we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 7. And with that, we're going to invite President Courtney. Senator Winters is not right here. And Representative Berger. Come up. If Senator Winters gets here, we'll slip her up to the table as quickly as we can. Instead of a short explanation, I know you're going to hear a lot about this. We're not going to take time from all of the people who want to testify, so we're going to let an introduction come from our two esteemed colleagues, including Senate President Senator Courtney.
My name is Peter Courtney, and I live in North Salem, and I'm a state senator representing District 11, which is portions of the great city of Salem, and Jervis and Woodburn. Chair Roblin and Vice Chair Bertschinger and members of the Senate Rules, Communities, and Economic Development Committee. So this is the committee I created.
That's
very
true.
Interesting. Very interesting. I look forward to this. This is an experience. So I didn't grow up with a state fair, because back where I came from, I'm not sure they knew what a state fair was. So when I got here in July of 1969, I think that summer I went to my first fair out here, and I just came like a kid. I love the fair. I particularly like the kids and their animals, and I like the food, the rides, the funky food, all that stuff, the tram, the merchants selling knives and every other thing. And I just think I like the whole thing, to tell you the truth. And I go every year, and sometimes I go several times a year. And I've always wanted to stay overnight in the barns with the kids and their animals, but I never have done that. But it's something that I just grew up with since I've come to the great state in 1969. And I have been involved with the state fairgrounds since probably the late 1970s, because when I was first elected to Salem City Council, that is in the heart of my ward. It was in the heart of my ward, the neighborhood association. That's it. Highland and Lansing and Northgate. You wouldn't know these neighborhood associations. I think the good Representative Vigor Berger is familiar with some of them then. And it was there. It was just there. And I remember it struggled. And I remember I'm the guy who made the motion to get rid of horse racing, which may not make some people still happy. But the track was decaying. It was in a very bad facility. It was that what do you want to talk about? The grandstands. The new pavilion, I helped work on that, and also the barn repairs remodeling, because it was struggling. I mean, it started to really struggle, and I don't know how to do these things. And so I became aware that the times have constantly changed around the fair. I mean, when it was initially out there many hundred years ago, there was nothing around it but itself. And so Salem has sort of grown up around the state fairgrounds. But times have changed, and I think we need a new structure. And this is, I understand the fair event itself, which is 11 days, is successful. The attendance stays around 250,000, depending upon the weather. Now, if it really is raining, you'll see some dip. But the weather's good, you'll see even more than that. So, and the event pays for itself. It makes money. It's a successful event. The problem is, what about all the other days? And when we last looked at this, we got desperate, so we said we'll give it over to state parks, as well as the grounds around the state capitol, everything else. We gave everything to state parks that year and said, whether you like it or not, take it. And so they took it, because that's the way you do things. So they took it. They took it. They didn't like it, but they took it. And I don't mean that in a very pejorative sense at all. They take it. You're like, yeah, okay, I'll take it. Things have worked out very well in terms of the event itself. But these 354 other days are becoming a problem for the affair. And we need to go back and look at a model. Actually, we looked at it before, and I totally opposed back in 20 years ago because I was concerned that it moved totally towards privatization, and I'm on record opposing it because they looked at the model we're looking at now. This basically, the Senate bill would make the state fair a public corporation like SAFE and the Oregon Health Science University. It requires the formation of the State Fair Council to act as board of directors. The governor would appoint many different types of people. I don't want to totally read from this, on the board to oversee it. Parks is saying they need at least a 2-year transition period during which Parks will continue to staff and provide financial support. State fairs across the country have been struggling for years. And I asked about this because I knew it was happening. In 2009, the Michigan State Fair shut down. In 2011, the Nevada State Fair shut down. In 2012, the Virginia Fair was bought by a private company called Universal Fairs, which also operates fairs in Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi. I don't want that because in those state fairs, to the extent we can find out, they have de-emphasized agriculture. And ag has to be a big part, I think, of this fair. I mean, that's an awful lot about the animals and the children. I want it to always be a big part of our fair. So I'm not interested in this privatization model. It's basically going on, and no disrespect to Georgia and Tennessee and Mississippi, but they were forced to go to that direction. So I want Oregonians to participate, which is why this bill will require. Other financially successful state fair, the models including Washington State, as well as Iowa, they use a 501c3 structure. The Washington fairgrounds are always buzzing with activities. Now, they have, I guess, 4 fairgrounds, and you, Chair Roman, you're from the state of Washington, and they have been able to use this model successfully. It's, sewing and stitchery expo, electronic shows and flea markets, conferences, small businesses, swap meets, where it goes on and on and on. They're making this thing work for the state of Washington, which is just north of us. Well, also, Senator Close, you have a significant connection with the great state of Washington, so I don't want to leave that out either. So maybe you're totally familiar with the great state north of us. So I think we got to try to do something dynamic. Oregon is not ready for the Washington-style nonprofit model. However, as it would be prohibit the fair from receiving any state funds or public funding, which will be necessary during the transition period. So we can't just shut it down totally in terms of subsidies. Therefore, the public corporation model is necessary for the near future. If the State Fair Council is successful in 5 years or so, they could move to the 501c3 structure and become independent of state dollars. So I could go on and on, but you have my written testimony. Is this going to be guaranteed it's going to work? I don't know. I don't know. I'm not that smart or that good. I've tried to hang on to the fair for as long as I can in terms of adjusting to the times and to Oregon and what she wants and doesn't want. This is something that I think we need to really seriously look at. And you will hear much more from many people today who are a lot smarter than I am, and they'll explain the details of this model. I think Oregon still wants her fair. I really do. And, of course, that's me talking. It's not just because it's in Salem. I just get the feeling when I go out there, so many people I'm with are not from Salem. The kids are not from Salem. It's from Oregon. So you were very nice to listen to me and let me do this and submit my written testimony. And I hope you will work this bill and favorably consider it. But I'll defer to your individual and collective wisdom. And thank you.
Thank you. Who next?
Go ahead, Jack. Thank you. Chair Roblin, for the record, State Senator Jackie Winters, I represent Salem, Monmouth, Independence, and Almsville, and Turner, and I'm here today to support Senate Bill 7. Senator Courtney, who also represents Salem, and I have probably spent more time, energy, and on the issue of the state fair, whether it should exist, whether it should not exist, whether it should rotate around the state. And over the 14 years. And, you know, we've had several iterations, and this body, over those iterations, have wrestled with the issue of financial support, and telling the fair that they, quote, need to be self-supporting. And we've looked at other states, and some of those states that are, we like to point to, Iowa and Ohio, and those who enjoy great fairs. And fairs celebrate its state. You know, not only its agriculture community, but that which represents the state. And those states, by the way, do actually provide an investment and a subsidy to their existence. We know now, I think we believe that the current structure isn't working. And so we also think that this provides a different model of looking at it and still to be able to continue, hopefully, the state fair. I like Peter, and I don't know how many of you still go to the state fair. I still do. And I still remember one of our legislators who, when we had the debate about whether or not we should continue the state fair or not, and that's former Representative Max Williams, and he was one of the no voters, and so he put this pig on my desk, and it was light sensitive, and when you hit the tail, it went oink, oink, oink. And, of course, as the person who used to do Jackie's ribs, I told him that was unfair. But there's something special when you get all 36 other counties coming together and the young people showing off the work that they've done with their animals and their, and even Senator Courtney and I got together and had a goat milking contest to show you how dedicated we are to the fair. And he cheated.
Actually, I did.
He got there early and bonded with his goat.
I came in here a little too early. I didn't want to get in trouble.
Seriously, colleagues, I am one of your senators who want to keep the fair. It's a place for us to celebrate who we are. And this is about how do we get it managed and to make certain that we can continue those celebrations every year. And, you know, children enjoy it. And maybe we have to relook at what we think about that time that's not during fair season and how we manage that piece. But certainly the fair, for me, is something that I think that needs to be continued in the state and the state celebration. And I ask you to, and I agree with Senator Courtney, we may be back again talking about whether financially we can afford it or not. And I think we also need to begin thinking about, like, Iowa and Ohio, and maybe it's worth our investment for our kids. You know, if we want to dream about, and I told somebody when we were talking about this, I said, one Oregon, to me, means that the kids from all over the state learn what's going on in the rest of the state. And so I would like just asking you to support Senate Bill 7.
Thank you.
Thank you, members of the committee. State Representative Vicki Berger, for the record. As a member of the Revenue Committee, I spend a lot of time talking to economists, and I can tell you the last 4 years have been pretty rough in Oregon, but if we had a sector that did well, it was our agricultural sector. They have been stars economically, and they will continue to be so because you can't outsource the land that you're sitting on, or the hillsides or the forests that are around us, and on into the eastern side, and it will continue to be. I hope that our fair has reached sort of its low point, and it's all up from here. We have been searching for a model that keeps it going. Because it is a unifier in our state, it is something that from all different regions you can come and talk about. And it isn't just agriculture. It's a celebration of Oregon itself. I think the three of us here have spoken to our need to preserve this by making it relevant going forward. And I don't think anybody behind us or anybody listening wants to just say, oh, we don't need a fair, because a fair is something critical and important to Oregon. So if this is the model that's going to work, I'm optimistic. It does have to grow out of just being a celebration of agriculture. It needs to be an exposition center that celebrates a lot of different things, and it needs to be over the entire year, not just the 11 days. I think this model gives it a really good chance to grow that way. It is a huge economic driver here in Salem and very important to Salem, but I would submit that it's important throughout the state. It isn't just a Salem-based exposition. It has the potential and needs to fulfill its potential to be part of all of Oregon and highlight all of Oregon. I have to tell a fair story because Peter Courtney, the goat bonder.
I thought you said you weren't going to go there.
Needs to hear this story. When I was a child growing up in Salem in extreme poverty, Senator Courtney, my family had a small meat company that had the concession for the fair. And so my father spent every day, all day, at the fair distributing the meat to the restaurants, and we would go with him every day and spend all day every day at the fair, because my mother, who was an at-home mom, would earn extra money during those 11 days as a waitress in the restaurants. And she was a waitress, Senator Courtney, and my father would talk to people around the fair, and he'd say, you need to go to that restaurant, sit in this table, and when you're done with your food, give this tip, and hand them a $2 bill. And my mother would know that that $2 bill came from her husband. Isn't that a great story? And it's true. So I feel very connected to the fair, as you can imagine. But it's way more important than my personal story. It's about Oregon itself. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel or comments? Yes, Senator Becher.
I too, feel very strongly about both our state fair and our county fairs too. I mean, it's part of our history, part of our culture. And to be honest with you, you talk about fair story. My very first political conversation with a governor was Governor Kulikowski down in Josephine County. Very lengthy conversation. At the time, I didn't know I'd ever be a state senator, but here I am. And it was in a very appropriate location. That political conversation took place in a pig pen.
Other comments? Well, thank you for bringing this bill to us, and thanks for being here today. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate your work on this.
Thank you.
We have a lot of people who have signed up to speak, and so we're going to put a limit of about 5 minutes, and we think we can get through it. We got it about an hour and a half. It's 2 hours, so we're hoping we can get there. So we'll put up a little sign that says you need to conclude your testimony in 30 seconds and so on and so forth. So with that, we're going to invite Lisa Van Lannen, Jim Brown, Jim Karn, and Tom Don Hillman all up together.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
You have Senator Johnson here.
If you want, that'll be fine. She had indicated that she was waiting to see what she wanted to do. So
she Mr. Brown, any chance to sit next to him is a good thing.
Okay. And I think we're ready. We have enough chairs for everybody that's up here. And
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16, and I am here principally to be supportive of the Senate President and our other legislative colleagues, Representative Berger and Senator Winters, but also to acknowledge and to support state parks. We have had several conversations with state parks that intertwine with this issue and other issues. They have come before this committee. I think we had the Kumbaya testimony before you when the issue moved out unanimously. And so I simply wanted to be here to honor the deal that we made with parks and to acknowledge the chair or the director of Oregon Parks and Recreation, his willingness to work in a collaborative way to solve multiple problems that come before this body, and that's my purpose in attending. Thank you.
Thank you. Whoever wants to go next.
Wow, that wasn't even a short straw draw.
That's true.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lisa Van Lannen, Assistant Director for Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. And since 2011, I've also overseen the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center. And I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 7 and the Dash 2 amendments, which haven't really been addressed. So I just want to cover those real briefly. So the things that changed in the Dash 2 amendments are the current location. There was some language in the original bill that talked about it could be moved to anywhere within Polk and Marion County. That has been changed back to stay on the current grounds. There were some concerns about the transition dates. We moved those out to like from a July to a December date just to make sure that it wasn't kind of conflicting with putting on the fair in August. So great feedback from everyone in the room. And then the council membership, we had it very specific about one person from this discipline, one from this, and it was more general of the governor could appoint 9 to 13 folks that had varying backgrounds and not be restricted to each individual piece. So I'll go through those in a little more detail when I overview the bill, but I just wanted to address what those changes were since they quickly appeared. So I'm probably going to go a little bit more than the 5 minutes because I think I'm the one stuck giving you all the detail.
Senator
parts.
Johnson saved you some time.
Thank you very much. So you've heard a lot of passion and a lot of the fair is, I mean, that's why we're all packing the room here today. Everybody is very passionate about the fair, the event, the history. It's been 150 plus years, depending on what historian you talk to. We did close for, I think, 3 years during World War II and one other year. But we can go back on record to 1887 when the first time that the fair was in front of the legislators looking for financial assistance. There were $3,000 in the hole, which probably represents the $7.7 million that we're in the hole today. And not only were they told by the Legislative Assembly, no, we won't fund you, but you can't sell any spirits or cigars. So that's a big challenge for a fair and a festival, as you'll hear today as we talk to you. So they went to the agricultural community. They stepped up, and the Ladbush Bank came forward, and they found the way to keep this legacy going 150 years later. As early as 1998, there's a joint legislative audit committee report that was done, and it was the same kind of dialogue we're having today. Should we move it? Should we close it? Should we sell it? Senator Courtney and Senator Winters talked about that. They are very familiar with all of those dialogues. And the result of that report ended up in a recommendation to create a task force to end horse racing, tear down the horse track, and then build a pavilion. And the pavilion was projected to be a sporting venue and to bring in $9 to $11 million in annual revenue and about 200 local jobs. The state ran out of money. We value engineered the building. There's no locker rooms. There's no HVAC. The roof is lowered, and it doesn't meet volleyball and basketball regulations. So it didn't quite produce what we had hoped it would, and it sits vacant, and we still have a debt service payment on it. We use it about 5% of its capacity. So we're trying to find a way to do something wonderful with that facility. So if you look at the whole 185 acres and the 40 facilities that we have, we generate about $670,000 in annual revenue. That's a little bit different than what we thought we were going to, where we were going to land. So then back in 2005 legislation, the State Fair was an agency back in front of the Legislative Assembly looking for assistance for the bond payment for the repairs in the pavilion that were constructed. And that was the time that they decided, well, we'll move it into parks, which moved it from general fund into parks as a division. And we began supplementing it with lottery funds. To date, we've put over $30 million into the facilities. And that's just been to keep the lights on and pay the employees. So there's no improvements that we've been able to take on. But I heard earlier that, you know, parks didn't want it, or we got lots of presence at the same time, but I can tell you from a state employee perspective, it's been a great challenge to learn how to run something as unique as a fair and an exposition center. We don't get to do that very often as public employees, so we've learned a lot. We addressed some internal controls that were presented to us pretty quickly. I think it was the first week we had an embezzlement and some other things we inherited. So we've got the internal controls in place. We've got the policies and procedures. We've tightened up as many processes as we can. We've streamlined every process within the state procurement and practices that we that we can. We've reduced cost tremendously. We constructed and completed a blue ribbon panel and then a report of some further strategic direction of what else we could do with the facilities and the 354 days. I think that's the big difference here. The 11-day event is great. It's those 354 days. How do we keep that alive to keep the fair going? So you're probably asking what's still not working. It's those 354 days. And as you heard today, and you'll hear further in some of the testimonies, this isn't unique to Oregon. There's many states that are struggling. One just south of us, CalExpo, I think, is looking at surplusing their property again. They've been back and forth, and you hear and you'll hear Don will probably talk more about the industry constraints trying to run these exposition center grounds as a state agency and be kind of tied down from the processes. So the facilities and the actual grounds are not current. You know, they're aging, and we just haven't found a way to bring them up to market. Most of the 501(c)s or the state fairs or the county fairs, I mean, Josephine County is another one I think that's struggling pretty dramatically right now. They have anchor tenants. They have something there year-round attracting people as a raceway or a speedway or a casino or something that's keeping somebody on those grounds all year long. And so really what we need is we need the state processes don't align with the business practices that we need, and so we need that extra structure change. So I want to thank Senator Courtney and Senator Winters and everybody else on the Legislative Assembly that has helped move this forward over the years. I know the dialogue's probably wearing, but we're still talking about it. We've put a lot of thought and strategic plan into what we need to do. So what happened in 2011 is Parks decided to do an outreach to every stakeholder we could get to come to the table. And you see those folks represented here today. We've brought in the ag community. We've brought in the creative living, the fine arts, photography. We've brought everybody who would want to come in and talk about what would be important to you if we moved it, if we closed it, if we sold it. What could we do differently than what we're doing to keep this thing going and alive? And we heard resoundingly, leave it in Salem, and we need to fix the business model. So that's kind of how we got to where we are today with Senate Bill 7. We ended up in Senator Courtney's office, and he said, well, why wait? Let's fix it now. And so we went, okay, let's gear up and go. So the overview of the bill basically creates a public corporation. It would create, the governor would appoint 9 to 13 members that would have varying backgrounds from private business, nonprofit, economic development, finance, event and facility management, and then there would also be, I don't know if I'm working, a local city official, elected city official, elected a county official, and there would be a non-voting legislator and a non-voting city manager that would be on the committee. So there still would be the public oversight. The council would have the authority to hire an executive director, and then Parks would look. In the bill, you'll see that the State Fair Council, the executive director, and the employees of the council are not state employees. Parks has worked very closely with SEIU and the 10 current employees and Department of Administrative Services to find jobs for those employees where they could either come back into Parks or another state agency where the positions closely aligned to the duties they're performing without impacting other employees. In addition, they would also have the ability, if they chose to elect to go work for the council. And the council would create their own health care insurance and their own pension and benefit packages. And so it would be as many options as they could have. And so thank goodness there's only 10 employees, and we've been able to work with folks to see what would make everyone happy and work out well. So the other thing that would need to happen is that council would need to create their policies or procedures, their business strategy, and Parks is committed to working with them. This could be a 3 to 5 year transition. We even have in the bill that we have the ability to negotiate providing those professional services to them at any cost, could be free. And that may look like things like it could be engineering, it could be planning, it could be human resources, it could be accounting, it could be budget. we've put a lot of time in. We don't want it to fall. So we want to make sure that it has those processes and procedures in place. So how this would work is the state would maintain the property. We would still own the assets. So the council would enter into a lease with the Department of Administrative Services, a minimum of 10 years. And the council would be subject, I know this has come up a couple times too, they'd be subject to the tort cap limits in ORS 30.72. And in addition to the property insurance, the agreement between DAS and the council would address liability insurance either through DAS risk management, or they would have to negotiate some type of indemnity language that would give the council exclusive care, custody, control, and operations of the fairground and the facilities. So, and really, I just want to reiterate the ongoing commitment from Parks to be able to get this, to be able to stand up. We know what it needs, and so it would be easier for us to help transition it rather than having a Department of Administrative Services or someone else who's not familiar. What we do hear from the industry folks that'll talk to you today is that it takes you a good 3 to 5 years to understand how to run and operate an expo. So we want to make sure we're there to get them through their first couple years so they're ready to hand off. And there's been some questions as we've met with stakeholders in the last couple weeks about accountability, so I just wanted to touch briefly on those pieces. There's oversight and process in setting up the State Fair Council. The governor appoints them. The governor can remove them. There is, as I mentioned, a legislative member. There is a the city manager would be there non-voting, and the city would and county would also be at the table. So there's still that public oversight that's there. The legislator would oversee the transition and receive annual updates on where this progress is going and if it's working. The ability for Secretary of State could come in and audit at any time. The council would need approval from DAS to sell or acquire or transfer any property. They couldn't just go make those decisions. The city would also have to be there to help talk about zoning and whatever other requirements would be necessary. The corporation would have to follow any FDIC or generally accepted accounting principles. They'd have to meet all the DAS requirements for the comprehensive annual financial report. So all those pieces are still there. They're a public entity. They're subject to public records and meeting laws. A financial report would have to be required at each meeting in order for their budget to be approved. They have to post it on a website annually. They have to have public comment. They have to have public review. And the council is subject to Chapter 244 ethics laws as well. So those were the things that are highlighted from the bill that are not easy to find, but probably important for you to know. And then the transition. The council would be appointed by the governor by January 2014. And then between January and October of 2014 is when the council and DAS would create their agreement. And if they were ready, they would come back to the legislators and say, yes, we're ready, or no, we need more time. And then December 2015 is currently the date for transition, but if they weren't ready, we could certainly look at extending that or accelerating that if necessary. And the only other piece that you may want to be aware of is the budget. And the governor's recommended budget, it was proposed that the $3.8 million that we supplement was moved out of the dedicated lottery funds into non-dedicated, and that's in a separate budget bill, which is 5532. And if there was additional funding after the 13-15 session, then DAS would come forward, ask for whatever that funding is, and allocate it out to the council. So those are the semantics of the bill that I think you probably would want to know, or more than you wanted to know. So in closing, I just want to thank the employees of the fair, the staff at OPRD, the stakeholders, the Salem leadership, and the folks that are sitting here in the room. We have been working on this for 2 years together, and it's been a very long journey, but a very good learning journey. And I especially want to thank Senator Courtney and Senator Winters for their leadership, and Senator Courtney for his passion and willingness to support this bill and get us where we are here today. So I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to clarify anything that I didn't
for you. We'll go through the rest of the panel, and then we'll see if there's any questions.
Senator Oblin and members of the committee, my name is Jim Cron. I'm the executive director for the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association. Representing the dairy industry, I'm here today to support Senate Bill 7. I probably have been one of the more vocal people for the last 5 or 6 years about what I feel is really the wrong direction for the state fair. I believe that there has been a number of livestock people who have decided not to show there. I believe that the activity with youth has not been supported at the level, and there's a number of reasons for that occurring. But I think those are two areas that really have to be emphasized and brought back. My history I have participated as a judge, as an exhibitor in exhibitions and live tech exhibitions and fairs throughout Canada and the United States for the last too many years to count. Myself, my family have participated in the Oregon State Fair for the last 22 years, and I now have grandchildren who are showing there. I think the idea of creating a different type of model is extremely important. I believe you put yourself in a position where you will be choosing people on the State Fair Council that will have interest and drive and desire to make this successful. I think the new structure creates an opportunity for success, and I think it creates, when you take a look at the young lady sitting next to me, Lisa Van Lannen, has that background in agriculture. She also has a background in youth activities, and if this thing's going to work, it's going to take leadership of that type and fashion to make it happen. I would strongly support this change in this structure.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jim Brown. I'm an Oregon State Parks Commissioner. I went on the commission in March of 2005, just 2 months before this change where Parks inherited the fair. The commission's worked closely with the department as they've gone through this journey that Lisa has described for you. I want to just stop a minute and recognize Lisa for her work. We went through three different state fair managers, and we're making limited progress. When the last one left, Lisa kind of talked to Tim Wood, raised her hand, and said, "I'm willing to tuck this under my wing."
That's exactly how it went.
And see if we can't really begin to solve both the administrative as well as the financial issues. And a large part of the success on the fair side goes to Lisa for figuring out how to do that. And the step-back approach she took in looking at, you know, what's been tried in the past, what do we need to try in the future as it relates to the expo side, is really why we're here today. And the partnerships that she's built with the people here in the room, a lot of credit goes to Lisa for that, and I thought we ought to recognize that. I think that, as you've heard, I think what is proposed in Senate Bill 7 is with the Dash 2 amendments is really our best approach to go forward. I mean, I think we're all interested in preserving the legacy of the fair and the public interest that's associated with that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name's Don Hillman, Newburgh, Oregon. I'm CEO and president of Hillman Consulting. I've been in the fair business now more than 30 years in one form or fashion. In fact, my first 15 years in the fair business was here at the Oregon State Fair. I served as their director, CEO, for the last 5 years, 1989 through 1994. I worked for fairs up and down the West Coast, including the California State Fair and Exposition down in Sacramento, the Washington County Fair Complex up in Hillsboro, and even the famous Puyallup Fair, the Western Washington Fair up in Puyallup, Washington. I can tell you things were different 20 years ago when I left my position here and headed south to go to Sacramento. Running a business like the Oregon State Fair was tough, but doable maybe more back then than it is now. And I was the guy that Senator Courtney mentioned 20 years ago throughout the same type of policy to consider by the legislature back in 1993. I guess it takes a while to resonate, but I'm happy that 20 years later, something that I got beat up for repeatedly in the 1993 legislature has now come to fruition. I've been very happy to work with a lot of successful fairs and organizations, and the organizational structure that you're looking at today is probably the best that we can do right now. If you look at the success of the Washington State Fair in Puyallup, they embrace this type of organizational structure. The success that the California State Fair had back in the late 90s, early 2000s, embraced this type of structure. The most important thing is to allow the organization to succeed. And right now, the way the Oregon State statute set up this organization, even through the Parks Division, limits its success. The State Fair is successful? Yes. Can it be more successful under this new model? Absolutely. You turn loose a very focused board of directors and a good industry experienced CEO, and you'll not only make $1 million, you'll make $5 million from that 11-day event. The other side of the coin, though, expo events can be either a curse or a blessing. And guess what? Here, it's a curse. There's other fairs that actually, their expo events actually generate more money, net profit, than their fair, and they use that money, of course, to prop up the fair and serve the community in those fashions. When you have a expo side of your business bleeding as bad as this one is, you've really got to look at how do you set it up for success in the future. And I think Senate Bill 7 goes a long way in doing that. I would just encourage the Parks Division and the new council to work very hard, probably harder on the expo side as to how they develop that agreement, because that'll be the one that will show its ugly head 5 years from now if it's not successful. But I've got to tell you, after 30 years working with a lot of smart people, I think this is the best thing you can do today. And I'd hate to come back in 20 years and say, now it's the third time we're coming up to see if this will work again. But please release the state fair via the parks to allow them to be more successful in the future. That's my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
Yes.
Technical question. Senator
Close.
Lisa, thank you for all your work on this. It's very exciting. I think we're all very excited. I just had a technical question about the signing of checks by the director. There was a question about whether there would be two signatures or there would be other procedures. Is that in the amendment? Can you direct me to if there was a change there? There was, actually.
Chair Roblin, Senator Close, it was removed. Just let me have Andrea find it for me.
It doesn't say anything. It's removed, actually.
It was completely removed.
So what is the process now, then, in the amendment?
It's actually completely, it was in on page 12 mm-hmm. in section 6, line 14. It was there, but it was completely removed. It had language in there that said the executive director, the council chair had to be in person and two people had to sign the check. And we're like, that really should not be in statute. That's a policy or procedure.
Right.
And what if we
want
to do it all?
So the council will make the decision.
Council will make the decision in their policy or procedure. So it's been completely removed.
Thank you for
reading it that detailed.
Detail.
Yeah, we were like, what?
Other questions for this panel? Again, and thank you, and thanks for the public service that you've all been to both the fair and the other and the park. So thank you for that. So with that, we're going to have, is it Penny Rink?
Peggy Rink.
Peggy Rink and Stacy Cowan. Oh, and we'll try to keep it going. It took a little longer to get the explanation of the whole bill, so I'll try to keep it to 3 to 4 minutes. If you can. And we'll keep watching that. But
thank you.
Notice there's a lot of other people out there.
We'll be brief, I promise. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Stacy Cowan with SEIU. I actually don't have any prepared comments, so that's how brief I'll be. I wanted an opportunity to allow Peggy to give some comments on behalf of the union and then, of course, just be available in case there were questions from our perspective.
Perfect.
So, Chair Roland, members of the committee, my name is Peggy Rink, and I'm a local 733 president of Parks and Recreation, SEIU 503 OPEU. I've been employed with Parks and Recreation for 14 years, and I'm here to testify today for the union in opposition of this bill. Senate Bill 7 establishes the State Fair as a public corporation and creates a new State Fair Council. What this means is the new council will be exempt from DAS audit rules, public contracting code, state employment rules, law including state salaries, guidelines relating to public lands, public facility rules, and state financial administration. These provisions are in place to protect taxpayer dollars. This bill would waive legislative oversight on all of these provisions. The State Fair is a public service and a strong Oregon tradition. We question the premise that this needs to generate revenue. Many state agencies that provide public services today do not make money. As it is now written, the legislation will create a structure that is vulnerable to conflicts of interest with the 5 members of the opposed 7-member governing body allowed to use public land and spend public money with virtually no oversight. And I want to mention that before I got here, I was not aware of the -2 amendments. So our analysis shows that the bill does not require council members and other employees to be subject to ORS 244, Oregon's government ethic laws. The bill prohibits the legislature from asking how taxpayer dollars in support of the fair are being spent. Although it will receive significant public funding, this new state fair council will establish its own budget. This budget will not be subject to review and approval by the legislature. Furthermore, the proposed state fair council will have the option of contracting with a private firm for an annual audit in lieu of annual audits done by the normal Secretary of State. If the council chooses to contract with an audit of the Secretary of State, we'll only be able to audit the council only if the Secretary of State has good cause to believe the financial impropriety has been occurred. Senate Bill 7 reduces transparency, accountability, and oversight of taxpayer dollars. Please take time to seriously consider whether or not this is the right path for the Oregon State Fair. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? I do want to say, and I thank you for pointing out that it was before the dash to amendments or whichever ones. And I think because of your advocacy, a lot of those things were addressed in those, and so I hope that you'll look those over as well again.
Yes.
Because for sure the ethics ones and some of these other things that you've mentioned, which I think would have been hard for us not to, it was good to see the changes in the amendments.
Right, and we were handed the dash too when
just
we
as we
in
came
door.
In. Yeah.
If I could,
so thank you for that,
Stacey
too.
Cowan, if I could, sure. I have a copy that's highlighted, and I still was having trouble locating the part about the ethics, so maybe that's something we can work with Parks and Rec on.
Yep.
Finding that reference, because that's something that is and very important.
They were raising their hands saying they'd do it as soon as you get there, so I'll show you where they are. So. Thank you. Any further questions for this group? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we have Leah Perkins-Hagel, Brian Carroll, Will Tucker, and Mark Labhart. Sorry. Thanks, Mark. And each time she says it's last time, she's only got like 30 seconds each. No, we're still at 3 minutes. You're good. The last group was helpful. They got you back some time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I was going to go ahead and start first. For the
Sounds
record,
great.
My name is Mark Labhart, and I have the privilege of chairing the Tillamook County Board of Commissioners and also serve on the Board of Directors for the Association of Oregon Counties. I'd first like to say, for the record, the Association of Oregon Counties supports the bill with the dash two amendments. So if you don't hear anything else I say, our association, all 36 counties, we support the bill with the dash two amendments. And now for just, I'm going to be less than 5 minutes. Back in 2002, USA Today did a survey. They went and looked at county fairs throughout the United States. And they picked 10 county fairs as what they called the top blue ribbon county fairs in the United States. The Tillamook County Fair was picked number one by USA Today. The Tillamook County Fair is a quasi-public entity, similar to the exact requirements that you have in the bill. So it does work. Our county fair is owned by the county, and we have a quasi-public entity that operates the fair. We send animals, we send photos, we send jams and jellies to the state fair every year. And we have a county fair at the booth at the state fair every year, and we're proud of Tillamook County's tradition being at the state fair. I think we've been there almost every year. We have FFA students in the back of the room. One of them's from Tillamook County. They send their animals to the state fair every year. So it's an emotional thing, not only for teaching these students how to be good citizens and showing their animals, but to be able to show them at a statewide level. There's only one opportunity I would like to add, and I think it could be considered, and that is because county fairs are so intertwined with the state fair, we would ask that one of the amendments may include a representative from county fairs on the council to look at that possibility. Because we are so tied, counties are so tied to the state fair, the stuff that comes to the state fair is from counties, and we have a long history of managing county fairs. Some are very strong, some are a little weaker, but we can provide some leadership, I think, to that council if you'd want to consider that as one of the members of the council. Won't fall on our sword for it, but just for something for you to consider. Our state fair, this is my closing comments, our state fair is what makes Oregon, Oregon. It's part of our history. It needs to be part of our future. Let's give this bill a chance to work. It may not be perfect. It's pretty thick. We all know that. There may be some issues that come up in it, but you meet yearly. So if we need to tweak it, we can tweak it. I think Senator Courtney was right. Let's move it on a pathway. I think Parks has done a yeoman's job of putting this bill together and working on it. On behalf of the Association of Counties, we ask you to support the bill with the Dash 2 amendments and maybe consider possibility of adding in that representative from county fairs on the council. Thank you.
Chair Roblin and committee members, Will Tucker from Linn County, Linn County Commissioner. I speak on behalf of the Linn County Board of Commissioners and for myself. The county fair and state fairs, I don't have a problem with them because in our case in the county, we actually can sometimes not have to move general fund support to our county fair. It breaks even or actually carries money over to the next year, as you heard state fair does. I'm worried about those 350 days, or in my case, 360 days of the rest of the years of the expo facilities that you have there. And I encourage you to look at that panel that you talk about, the state fair council. Look at that council carefully and think about profit-motivated staff members to be on that, well, committee members to be on that council. The big change for Linn County's Expo Center, to take it from $500,000, $800,000 out of general fund down to less than a couple hundred thousand dollars, has been changing the advisory councils and changing that to people who are not in the bureaucracy, they're not in the county government, but local community leaders who've got the time and the interest but the profit background to bring to it. And I ask for both time and interest because they need to attend the fair, they need to attend the events there, they need to get feedback from the community about what's working at the Expo Center. But they also have to have the interest in heart. If they aren't interested in being there, if they don't want their name on the letterhead, it's not the right person to have there. But in the case of Linn County, we account for one-third of all hotel nights. One-third of all hotel nights in Linn County are because of the Expo Center. You don't have a good record today of where you are with hotels, but you impact, the expos that go on here have impacted Linn County's hotels. You are driving a huge economic engine, but you're also missing. I'm taking your business away. You will compete against me, and I look forward to competing against you, Expo Center against Expo Center. But I want to compete with you fairly. I want to compete with you with a profit-driven motivation, and I want to see that huge investment of all these years of building those facilities, and some of them value-driven engineering. I just cringe when I think about the expo center that's there, and what it could have been if it had locker rooms, if the ceilings were at a height where you could play volleyball or basketball inside of them. I hope that you'll think about profit. People who are understanding the business sector and can move that whole philosophy towards one of thinking about it running as a business. We as a board encourage you to support Senate Bill 7.
Thank you. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Brian Carroll. I'm here today to represent the Oregon Parks Association and to support Senate Bill 7 and the Dash 2 amendments. I've been working in Parks and Recreation for 25 years, and I had the privilege in the first 9 years of that to work as the Operations Supervisor of a fairgrounds in the state of Washington. And I can tell you there was a lot of hardship there working on those grounds and a lot of great things that happened. And without a doubt, the most wonderful things at the fair was always working with the volunteers and the kids and the people that worked there at the fair and the excitement that they showed and the enthusiasm for working there. And so it was certainly one of the wonderful aspects of my career. And as I've moved through my career, I've certainly seen the challenges to government entities, especially at the county level and the parks departments throughout, whether it be state parks or county and local parks. We've been asked to be more self-sufficient. We've been asked to operate more like a business. And I think Senate Bill 7 is just the next step in that, and really taking it, being more creative and trying to let this entity thrive. And so I really would appreciate your support for this bill. I think it's the right step for state parks. It takes a burden away from them in terms of operating those facilities. and puts it in the hands of, as Commissioner Tucker has said, if you put it in the hands of some people that are looking at it from the standpoint of operating it as a business, that would be how that facility would thrive. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. My name is Leah Perkins Hagley, and I am the president of the Oregon Fairs Association, as well as the manager of the Washington County Fair in Hillsboro. And I am here on behalf of all 36 county fairs in Oregon, and we also urge you to support Senate Bill 7 and the Dash 2 amendments. I'm going to be very brief because pretty much everybody has said the same things that I want to say. But I will reiterate what a lot of people have said. I'd like to thank Lisa Van Landlin. Her outreach to the county fairs in Oregon has been stellar. You know, like was said earlier, we depend on the state fair. The state fair depends on us. We all work in a symbiotic relationship with fairs. And having her come and talk to us at our state convention and keeping in touch with us via email has been very crucial. The one thing I also want to talk about is our youth. I know we've talked about that a lot today. Over 1,000 4-H and FFA members attend the Oregon State Fair every year. And I think that everyone will agree with me that they are our future leaders, and investing in the Oregon State Fair is investing in them. So with that, we urge you to support the bill. It's a bold action. We think it's definitely the right way to go. Thank you for allowing us to testify today.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? I just want to make a full disclosure. I got to go to the Tillamook County Fair this last time, and Mark here was my guide around the fairgrounds. And just so you know, Senator Brzezinski has been a thorn in my side at different times, and he did redistricting and gave that part of the county to me, took it away from Senator Johnson. That has not been an easy task for me to deal with, Senator Johnson, on a regular basis. She's already left. But every time we go to Tillamook, she says, I hate him taking my county, and I have to deal with that each day. But I have really appreciated it in the county. It was an amazing, it is an amazing fair, and I'm happy that the national people recognize that as well. But yeah, couldn't have asked for a better tour guide. And fairs, having grown up with one in my little hometown of Port Angeles, Washington, and the fair is right there, it's where everybody meets everybody. And it was kind of really feeling that home thing when I was there, because everybody knew Mark, and it was, you walk through the fairgrounds and it was one conversation after another. So appreciate that as well. So thank you all for being here. So next we're going to have Jessica Budge, Chris Jones, Jeff Horning, and Betsy Hartley. And I hope I didn't murder too many of those names. So. And whoever wants to start, we're...
I can start. My name is Chris Jones, and I represent the livestock entity, and in particular the Oregon Purebred Sheep Breeders Association, along with my fellow officer, Loyal Burns, who's in the room today. I'd like to thank the committee for taking a moment to hear this bill. It's a bill that's very close to my heart, and it's wonderful to look at the senators and representatives and hear their wonderful stories and their passion for this entity that I heard earlier today. As an individual, I kind of wear a number of hats. I was a third-generation racetracker. I was a 4-H member, an FFA member. I've been an FFA advisor. I've been a sheep exhibitor. And quite frankly, today I wear the hat of the contract and open class livestock coordinator, because I was passionate enough to take the job, and Lisa convinced me I should take the job. So... with that, in addition, I'm also a mother of two children that are at the age that they're starting to exhibit at the Oregon State Fair. You know, I can tell you to support Senate Bill 7 with Dash amendments for a number of reasons. I think it's been extremely inspiring to look at the stakeholders' meetings, and if you look at how legislation should come from the people and the grassroots efforts and have the buy-in of all the stakeholders, this truly is a piece of legislation that I really believe has had that, and I think a lot of that credit truly goes to Lisa and Andrea and the rest of the staff at Parks and Rec at Oregon State Fair. It's just been an amazing process to see that move forward. But I think on a more passionate level, and knowing we're in a time commitment, and I know you guys have my written testimony, but deeper than that, you know, when I called Lisa the first time, it wasn't to be nice. quite frankly, it was to explain to her I wasn't real happy that basically they would be putting the open class livestock superintendent on seasonal leave as an employee, and that represented the largest square footage of exhibition space space on that state fairgrounds. And quite honestly, at the time, you know, I really focused on it in a much smaller viewpoint. You know, I wanted something. I wanted an improvement in the livestock. Morale was low. People were leaving that thing like it was a sinking ship. And quite frankly, we have the top national livestock exhibitors in almost every species out there. When you come to Oregon State Fair and walk through that open class barn at any given time in that 10-day space, you may see the supreme champion heifer that hasn't just been the supreme champion heifer here, but she's been that way at every one of the major livestock shows across the country. You may see the goats that are the top goats in the nation. Several of our sheep exhibitors and junior exhibitors travel yearly to Louisville, which is known as one of the top national exhibition places, and they win. I mean, there's a reason they drive 2,000 miles to make that round trip. Same is true with our dairy exhibitors. So when things were down to the point that we have these national leaders being treated like second-class citizens, and we have people with some of the top national stock in the nation sitting within a 25-mile radius, and they won't come to Oregon State Fair, there was a problem. What I realized within a short time of talking to Lisa, quite frankly, was that, you know, once we took the faces and got over the finger-pointing part, we actually had the same goals. We wanted a tremendous state fair. We wanted to promote our livestock. We wanted to promote our junior exhibitors. We wanted to make this the celebration of Oregon, just like the people we've heard earlier. But there were things standing in the way. Budget was a huge consideration. But we were all fairly creative. But then you get past that part, and the bureaucratic part was standing in the way. So the good news is I think what we've seen is through this, we can have a solution. If we work together, and I think Senate Bill 7-2 offers that, if we work together, we can bring Oregon State Fair back to that top national fair in the United States. And I think that we have the power to do that as every citizen sitting in that room or this room today. Thank you very much for taking time to hear my testimony.
Thank you.
I have to follow that.
My name is Jeff Horning, and I'm representing the Agribusiness Council of Oregon, and we're in support of Senate Bill 7 today. And much like her, I'm here because my first conversation was with Lisa, and I mea culpa on her part because we had a very bad experience at the Oregon State Fair. And we really support this because there's a huge opportunity that's been mentioned that the state fair is profitable over those 11 days, but it's the other 354 days, I guess it is, that it's not. But I also think there's a lot more potential within the Oregon State Fair to being more profitable. And I talk about this from a sponsorship perspective. In 2010, we had partnered with a very large processor to do a fundraiser or a foodraiser for the Oregon Food Bank. The idea was to do a food drive over Labor Day weekend, and this processor was going to match can for can everything that was donated by the general public. Unfortunately, because of the bureaucracy and rules and regulations that go with being a government entity, we were limited in the number of volunteer passes and other things we could get, and instead of having presence at all the entries, we were limited to one location, and frankly, it turned out to be a complete failure. However, I got a lot of phone calls in the following weeks and days. We heard about it. We brought it. There was nowhere for us to drop it off, and it was all because we couldn't have the presence allowed because we weren't a paid sponsor or a cash sponsor. And so I really think that Senate Bill 7 allows the flexibility, which is critical when you're trying to run an event, to work with sponsors. I've had over 20 years of experience running nonprofit and or more private events. And today's world, you can't just slap a logo on and say you're a sponsor, pat you on the back, goodbye. You have to be very value-driven, and your sponsors want to have a return on their investment. And that means being active at the fair and being able to do certain things. And currently, that's somewhat restricted. And because of that, we're very much in favor of Senate Bill 7.
Thank you.
Yeah. Chair Roblin and members of the committee, my name is Jessica Budge, and I am a current student at Oregon State University. And I have worn a variety of different hats at the Oregon State Fair. And starting with my time as a young person just going to the State Fair, and then it turned into exhibiting through FFA, through my dairy cattle projects. And then as I became older, I was the Dairy Princess Ambassador, and I spent all 11 days at the State Fair advocating for the dairy industry. I've also worked as a Red Barn volunteer, and this past summer as an employee of the Oregon Dairy Products Commission working in their booth. Throughout all of my time in all of these different roles at the State Fair, I've gained a variety of different experiences that are unmatched by anything else. And I'm not here today to complain about issues that I have with the State Fair, but rather to express the meaning and the purpose that the State Fair has had in my life and to articulate the potential that I see for the State Fair and my strong desire to see it continue to grow and flourish. As a livestock exhibitor, and I'm sure there's four FFA members in the back of the room, as a former FFA member myself, the experiences that you gain as a livestock exhibitor in 4-H and FFA are tremendous. Skills that are unmatched by anything else. You learn a sportsmanship, you work hard work, dedication, things that are just valuable skills that you only learn by doing. And this is not only in the livestock side of things, it can also be the static exhibits and other 4-H projects. And youth get these experiences at the State Fair, and the State Fair provides incentive to be competitive in those events and also just participate in the festivities. It provides a venue for those activities. And then as a Dairy Princess Ambassador, we had the opportunity, like I said, to spend all 11 days at the State Fair advocating for the dairy industry and explaining to the public agriculture. And as has been said earlier today, I think that is a huge portion of the State Fair, is giving the public an opportunity to see agriculture in a hands-on, tangible way. There's hundreds of people that can see cows being milked, and that's not an opportunity they get to see every day, and brings people closer to those things that they take for granted often. Being a Dairy Princess Ambassador, that's funded by the Oregon Dairy Women, and the Oregon Dairy Women gain a majority of their funding by their Red Barn and selling ice cream desserts at the State Fair. And there's many different nonprofit organizations like the Oregon Dairy Women that fundraise through the State Fair, and I think that is another huge venue and role that the State Fair provides for these organizations that support youth activities and different things. And then this past summer, I actually stepped away from the livestock barns and wore a different hat as in the Jackman Long Building as an employee of the Dairy Products Commission. And I gained more professional experiences there working with public, customer relations, and things like that. And again, it helped me to gain those knowledge and skills. The experiences that I've had with the State Fair, as you can see, have been very diverse and plentiful, but every opportunity has given me these new skills and abilities that have been, like I said, unmatched by any other, and they've helped me as I've been a student at Oregon State and also as I've pursued other internship opportunities. So while I'm the first to admit I don't know all the logistics of the bill, I am in strong support of it, and I would like nothing more for young people like myself to continue these traditions for generations to come. Thank you.
Thank you. And?
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, I'm Betsy Hartley, and I'm here today as a friend and supporter of Oregon FFA, and I am pleased to offer support for Senate Bill 7 with the DASH amendments. I, like most of these folks, wore many hats, and like several of these folks, went to my first stakeholder meeting that Lisa Van Lannen convened, ready to tell somebody exactly what I thought, and it was not positive. The fair, in my mind, is important for a variety of reasons. One of the biggest reasons is food, and I'm not talking just the deep-fried Twinkie or the ice cream at the dairy barn. I'm talking about the fact that the public come to see fruits, vegetables, gardening, animals, baby chicks hatching. They get to see canning and baking, and they get to interact with food and agriculture and the leaders of our future agriculture and natural resource industries. People today are further and further away from agriculture. 2% of the population is farming and ranching. State Fair is the one point where for a brief moment in time we can bring those audiences together in a happy, friendly, level playing field kind of way and let them experience each other. And that, I see that importance for State Fair. One of the things that's not in my written testimony is that I'm a former fair board member for the Benton County Fair. I was appointed by the commissioners and served for 4 years. And our struggle was extreme with what to do in the non-fair times. And I know that the use of the Exposition Center in the off-fair times has to weigh heavily into the decision as well. And I appreciate the challenge. I think it's a challenge that everything, including Commissioner Tucker has addressed it in Linn County a little differently, but it is an issue that has to be addressed, and I think they have to be released of the burden of some of the state bureaucracies that don't allow festivals and fairgrounds to work in this messy, chaotic, kind of crazy, last-minute opportunity way. State agencies have rules they have to abide by, and some of the best fairs, the way they're run, they don't have to abide by exactly all those exact same rules. They have opportunity to grab things as they come up, not to make anything sound on the bad side, but they have the ability to be flexibility when a fabulous opportunity steps in front of them. And sometimes state agencies don't have that flexibility and ability. I guess at this point would be remiss if I didn't talk about our FFA members. They're part of the fabric of the state fair, 4-H and FFA. Four of them have taken time out of school and or spring breaks to be here today to show their support of this. State fair is the capstone to their hard work. Sometimes it's their county fair. A lot of times it's the state fair. They make friends and network. They put a modern face on agriculture. They interact with the public, and they actually provide a very real, tangible value to the state fair experience. They've been a part of the fabric of the success in the past, and they very much intend to be part of it into the future. So Senate Bill 7 with the Dash 2 amendment sets us off in a direction of possible sustainability, and I would love to see a fair with full livestock barns and showcasing technology and interacting public, national events vying for space during the fair, national events and festivals vying for off-fair space, because the fairgrounds is that desirable, and I think that this sets us in a direction where we have the possibility to achieve it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Again, I guess I'll just take one moment as a former teacher and administrator to say that it's really great to have Jessica here, and having young adults who are going on education to take their time out to come back here, the FAA members as well. And your articulation of what it means to be a real learner was really exciting to hear, because, I mean, that really is what all education should be about, and you articulated it exceptionally well. So thank you. And using the fair as the way of articulating what learning is about was important, I think, for all of us. So thank you. And thank you all. Next, we have Anna Peterson, Janet Carlson, Mark Shipman, and Debbie Mattoon. Again, whoever wants to start. But be careful, once they start, they might steal the show, and then you have to follow that.
You go ahead. I'll follow you.
Thanks.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. It's my honor and privilege to be able to come over and speak with you. I represent the City of Salem as the mayor, and the State Fair in Salem is an extremely important property for us.
Don't forget to give your name, Anna.
I'm sorry?
Don't forget to give your name.
Oh, my name. Oh, Anna Peterson.
Very good.
I'm sorry.
For the record. That's great.
I'm usually on the other side of the microphone.
I know.
Okay. So, Chair Roblin and members of the committee, I'm so pleased to be here to support Senate Bill 7 with the Dash 2 amendments. I'd like first to express my appreciation to Senate President Peter Courtney, Senator Winters, and Representative Vicki Berger for their leadership and their desire to preserve the rich heritage of the Oregon State Fair and the opportunity that it provides to showcase Oregon's products and people. I wish to convey that the City of Salem's strong support for finding a way for the fair and the Expo Center to continue its operations on the state property that's historically devoted to such purposes is crucially important. Because of the fair and exposition center's importance to our city and region, I'm pleased that the proposed Dash 2 amendments retain the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center at its current location in Salem. In addition to fulfilling its function as a state gathering place in the capital. The fair and exposition center provide millions of dollars in business each year for our local restaurants, motels, hotels, and merchants. In 1998, Willamette University Atkinson School estimated that the following economic impacts, $137 million annually, including more than $70 million in direct expenditures by fairgoers, exhibitors, and carnival operators. The creation of 9,223 annual jobs, many of them are part-time, and over $2.2 million in annual wages paid. The estimated impact of exposition events outside of the fair was $117.1 million, with 55% of that impact going directly to the Salem area. We believe, as did the 2009 Strategic Framework Blue Ribbon Panel, that the state is entrusted to protect and promote the public's interest in the fairgrounds and tend to its multi-million dollar investment in the home for the state fairgrounds and state park and recreation services. We, like that panel, also recognize that the current system may not allow the state the agility and the freedom, in short, the flexibility necessary to create valuable, profitable deals, and profitability is necessary to protect the fair event and the public space in light of unstable revenues. Senate Bill 7-2 could serve as the vehicle that will provide the agility and the freedom required to protect and preserve this critical component of our economy, our city, and our heritage. And I want to emphasize our agricultural heritage. Salem is surrounded by farms and fields, nurseries and vineyards, and much of our economy is determined by the health of that agriculture. It's crucially important for the city of Salem and indeed to the entire state of Oregon that we have a place like the Oregon State Fair where agriculture can be promoted and explained and studied by people from outside of the agricultural areas, and that's another aspect that the fair has consistently provided, and we would like to see that remain here as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I'm Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner. Appreciate this opportunity to come and testify on Senate Bill 7. You have my printed testimony, and I will not read it to you, but I'll hit some highlights. First of all, I do want to acknowledge Senator Courtney and Senator Winters and our legislative delegation from Marion County who have worked tirelessly on this issue. Secondly, I want to point out that Salem is Marion County's largest city, and it is our county seat. And so we have a strong connection there. Marion County has been number one in agricultural sales for a number of years. Agriculture is very important to our economy. And, of course, you've heard about the importance of the fair for youth, and our youth from the Marion County Fair participate in the state fair. But the third thing that I want to point out is that the Marion County Fair is really joined at the hip with the state fair because we hold our state fair on the state fairgrounds. We do not operate our own fairgrounds. So we have a four-day event, and then we don't have anything the rest of the 361 days a year to deal with. I actually have a copy in my file cabinet of the original deed that was from the Marion County Agricultural Society when Marion County actually owned these fairgrounds and Salem and deeded them to the state fair. Not that we want them back, but I just wanted to let you know that is a piece of history. I have served on the county fair board as the fair board treasurer and a member. I'm now the Board of Commissioners liaison. When we started to try to turn around our fair financially, I recall bringing in the finance people and the contracts people and the IT people and having the risk manager talk about the concerns they had about the fire throwers and, you know, the insurance. And, you know, so I do think that giving more flexibility is just really a different animal than governments are really used to dealing with. And I have laid out three bullet points of provisions that we're especially supportive of, or I'm especially supportive of. One, inclusion of an elected county official in the State Fair Council. Second, a commitment to conduct the State Fair in the City of Salem. And third, setting that period of time of 3 or 5 consecutive years to determine the financial viability because we need time to figure out our own options as Marion County should changes be made. So that is my testimony. And again, I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, I'm Debbie McCune, and I'm the Director of Sales for Travel Salem, the destination marketing organization for Salem, Marion, and Polk Counties. And I'm pleased to offer support for Senate Bill 7 with the Dash 2 Amendment. The Oregon State Fair and Expo Center is a major piece of the inventory that we have to offer here in the region. The ability to offer that location that can accommodate thousands of visitors and generate millions of dollars in economic impact to our local economy is extremely important to the Salem area. We are currently working with several events that will bring thousands of attendees to Salem because of the Oregon State Fair and Expo venue. Groups like the BMW Motorcycle Owners Association, whose 2013 rally will be at the Oregon State Fair and Expo Center this July, and will bring in 6,000 to 7,000 people who will spend many days exploring our region. And just commenting, I heard from Linn County, but I know for a fact we're already pushing lodging down to Linn County as of today. I got calls that we're extremely, we're booked and we're pushing business down there. So
he gave you a thumbs up.
Yeah. And another example is this Jehovah's Witness conventions that bring 5,000 attendees three times each summer to Salem and has for the past 5 years. There is no other venue in the region that can accommodate events of this size and generate this type of economic impact. I believe that Senate Bill 7-2 will lead to the economic sustainability of the Oregon State Fair and Expo Center. The key provisions of the bill will improve the financial efficiency of the venue and results over time in a better bottom line. The ability to be more flexible, timely, and efficient when contracting with vendors will in turn improve the experience of the groups we bring to Oregon State Fair and Expo Center and Salem. We are currently booking events 3 to 5 years out in the future. The groups with which I'm currently working need to know that the Oregon State Fair and Expo Center will be thriving, financially sustainable venue for years to come. Today's uncertainty about the Oregon State Fair and Expo Center does not build confidence with potential clients. I ask for your support of Senate Bill 7-2 so that we may continue to have this important venue available for years to come. Thanks for the opportunity, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. I am Mark Shipman, past president of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce, and I'm here this afternoon testifying on behalf of the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce in support of Senate Bill 7, specifically Dash 2 version that you have in front of you. Like many of our 1,200 members, I am a small business owner here in Salem. Our business has been based here in Salem for over 80 years. I live here in Salem and am passionate about the continued growth and economic vitality of our community. The Fair and Exposition Center are vital to our economic health and vitality and to the greater Marion County area and Mid-Valley area. Many of our members and their employees not only attend the fair, but they provide essential goods and services to the Fair and Exposition Center. The estimated economic impact, as identified by Mayor Peterson, is a huge impact to our community, and it's not something that's easily replaced. Keeping the fair based here in Salem is critical for our community, and I support the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 7-2 that keep it here in Salem for the future. Most recognize that the current structure or current model of the fair is not sustainable. The past 6 years have really enabled the Oregon State Parks Department to show that the fair can be self-sustaining and with the right organization and governance can actually thrive. I'm excited about version 7-2 and specifically what I call the McLaren Amendment, which is found in section 4.1 on pages 3 and 4, which increased the commission to a minimum of 9 and a maximum of 13. It really provides the governor with flexibility with respect to who he wants to or she wants to appoint and when they want to do that. Senate Bill 7 is balanced. It provides the flexibility that is required in order to enable the fair to grow and operate more like a business, yet respond to the market through relief from state agency rules and regulations. It still has the oversight component that provides the necessary sideboards through checks and dates, establishing the council, annual progress, financial reports to the legislature on the progress of the new corporation. I believe that changing the business model will benefit not only the members of our organization, but also the greater Marion County community. Now is the time to take the next step needed to create the public corporation necessary to enable the fair to grow and thrive for our community, but also for the entire state. I respectfully urge you to approve Senate Bill 7-2 as amended. Excuse me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for this group? No. Thank you very much. And our next panel, Ron Burbeck, John Chandler, Bill Bradley, and Joel Zach.
Want to go over where the names were called?
That's great. Perfect.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Ron Burback, and I operate my business at 3407 Southeast 108th Avenue in Portland. And I have been providing carnival attractions at the Oregon State Fair since the mid-70s. I have been on the grounds there every day of every fair for the last 36, 37 years. I've been in the trenches.
And you can back away from the microphone just a little bit because it'll pick it up.
Which way?
Push it away from
the way there.
Yeah, oh, that's perfect.
Is that it?
Yep.
I'm kind of new at this.
That's no problem.
I support SB7 because I know that the existing fair management doesn't have a chance of operating this organization at a profit. Now, I don't want to discourage them. It's not because they're stupid. There are really a lot of very intelligent people in the Parks Department. However, they are so restrained in how they can operate and how they can do attractions and how they can bid that it is absolutely impossible to run the fair, I believe, at a profit in that manner. And therefore, I support SB7. Now, the Parks Department, as I understand, doesn't even have an accounting system for telling what identity or what feature makes or loses money on the fairgrounds. So you could do two things. You could change the way the Parks Department operates and allow them to operate more like a business, or probably easier with SB7. Now, the reason I like SB7 is the best fair that I know of in the Northwest, Western Washington Fair in Puyallup, has a membership of board of directors of 12 people, seven of which are extremely successful business people. I mean extremely successful. So that the fair is geared towards a profit. Although it's a nonprofit fair and nobody benefits from it, all the money goes back in, anytime you go before that board, you're going before a bunch of businessmen, and you better have your ducks in order. Toughest board I go before, I'd rather go before them than anybody. I was told that the main problem with the Parks Department is that they are a service provider, and they are not a profit provider. So I want to reemphasize that so we can move away from the Parks Department and move on to the SB7. There is a bit of a problem I have with it. In reading it yesterday, again, with the amendments to it, I don't quite understand who you can have a contract with that you don't have to go to bid with, and who you can have a contract with that you have to go to bid with. Very, very important that if they're going to run the fair as a business identity, that they be able to enter into contracts with people that they feel would be the best for the fair without going through the bidding process. And I know there's always the discussion about oversight. There's a million ways you can always put in oversight. That can't be any big problem. So I think if SB7 was passed, you had a 12-person board, at least five or six of them business people would be on their way to making the fair a big success again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairman Roblin and members of the committee, my name is William Bradley, and I'm the event producer for Westlake Promotion, Inc. We've been producing consumer events here at the Expo Center for about 32 years, specifically the Oregon Manufactured Home Shows and both the fall and the spring Oregon State Salem RV Shows. Our events utilize the Jackman Long Building and the Columbia Hall and the surrounding outside event space areas. Our rental fees over that time on just these events have produced nearly $2.5 million in revenue since we've been there. Excuse me, I'm fighting a cold. Obviously, this is our livelihood, and as Mayor Peterson had said, the economic impact statement of the Expo Center is critical, and I believe that the fair is also tied to the Expo Center, because you can't have a fair without functioning buildings. So we support SB 7 if it's given the full support to succeed. And due to the experience, expertise, and learning curve involved with managing any successful fair, we believe there'd be a 3 to 5 year period would be a realistic transition period. So I'll be brief. We support Senate Bill 7 with that bullet point.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Roblin, excuse me, members of the committee, my name is Joel Zack. I'm a longtime professional photographer here in Salem and have been a longtime professional photographer along the entirety of the West Coast. I'm here to support Senate Bill 7, and I should also mention that I am also involved in several of the arts organizations here in the Willamette Valley. And paradoxically, I am also the organizer for the Creative Living exhibit for 2013 as it relates to the fine arts photography exhibit. I say paradoxically because I actually don't have a real warm, fuzzy story to tell you about the Oregon State Fair. In 2012, I was so incensed in the way that the art exhibit was being rolled out and the situations that had been developing during that time that I was extremely vocal about the fair and the way it was going, to the point where I was actually boycotting and was persuading a lot of other artists and a lot of other photographers to likewise boycott the fair for 2012. Well, towards the end of summer, there were several public meetings surrounding the fair that I had the privilege of attending, and I also got to meet with the assistant director, Lisa Van Lannen. And on all occasions, she was very clear and offered evidence to the fact that the business model was completely untenable, and it was basically on a downturn to the point where it either had to get resurrected or get eliminated. That's what convinced me. My turnaround then was to lend my expertise to this year's fair. The fair actually means many things to many people. But speaking, to the arts specifically, for the adult artists in Oregon, it's an absolute terrific showcase for professional and amateur artists. But it goes a little bit deeper than that. It is also a wonderful venue for the youth artists across Oregon to take advantage of that showcase, yes, but also to rub shoulders with the people who are involved with the business of producing art and selling art for a living 100% of their time. They are able to witness firsthand the fact that art in the state of Oregon can be just as viable and as professional as any of the other professions out there. This does not happen in any other venue except at the Oregon State Fair. And I think that Senate Bill 7 has the opportunity to keep that particular door open. And that's the reason why I support it, and I would ask that you support it as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chandler.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Chandler here wearing two hats, if you will, one on behalf of the Oregon Home Builders Association, which is my client, the other as an individual citizen of Oregon and a fan of the state fair. With regard to the professional hat, I run a nonprofit business in Salem, the Oregon Home Builders Association. We have 14 local associations around the state, one of which is the Marion Polk Home Builders Association. Marion Polk, HBA, we share an office building with them on the north end of town here. They hold two events at the fairgrounds, at the Expo Center. They hold the Mid-Valley Home Show, which takes place in January. You should all plan on attending next year. And the Yard Garden Home Improvement Show, likewise, should be on your calendar for March of every year. About 150 local businesses participate in these two, in each of these shows. So 300 businesses are exposed to the public using the fairgrounds as a vehicle for doing so. About 7,000 to 8,000 attendees per show. So about 15,000 folks go through and see the things that relate to the building industry, gardening. That's a huge piece of the economy, as you all know. The fairgrounds is critical for that business. It's been helpful to that particular not-for-profit, the Marion Polk Home Builders Association, of their success, but it's also, it makes them, the community, the people who support the building industry, the landscapers, the painters, the decorators, you name it, get to go and show off as well. And it's because of the existence of the fairground. Frankly, if the fairgrounds venue didn't exist, we'd have to come up with one similar. And I mean no disrespect to any of the other facilities in the state, but there's only one state fairgrounds. And there's only one facility like this in Salem for the greater part of the Mid-Willamette Valley. And there's things you can do at the fairgrounds that you simply cannot do at a show in Portland, whether it be for size or the type of exhibits or simply the handiness of being able to get into and out of the place in the first place. So you heard from others testifying that this is an integral part to this community. And it's also, I think, an integral part to the state. And I've been going to the state fair my entire life, which is getting longer and longer. As a child, I worked there as an FFA officer when I was served as a state FFA officer, stayed in the dormitories. I didn't stay in the livestock barns, which Senator Courtney wanted to, because you got to draw a line someplace. But I did stay in the dormitories, which weren't a great deal better than livestock barns, I don't expect. I took my kids to it while they were growing up. I'm now taking grandkids to it. I told Senator Courtney when I first found out this was being discussed with state parks, I don't volunteer for anything. Many of you have known me for a long while. That's not what I do. I volunteer to help with this legislation as an individual. As I've gone to the state fair over the last few years, state parks involvement has been very beneficial. They've done some tremendously good things out there, some very smart things. But every time over the last 10, 15 years I go through there, I think of things that could be better, could be different. And that's not a criticism. It just means there's a huge asset there. And I'm not just talking about the grounds or the buildings. I'm talking about the asset of the state fair and its location here in the state capitol and the ability that if we did it right, and I think Senate Bill 7 with the Dash 2 amendments is exactly the right thing to do. If we collectively take this opportunity to maximize that asset and what it means for the state in terms of the urban and rural divide, every session you folks come here and you fight about issues that are oftentimes driven not so much by the issue itself but by the fact that the people that live in Portland don't understand people that live in Burns. And vice versa. And a state fair can't fix that, but it can provide the opportunity for people from all around the state, be it 4-H and FFA kids, to artists, to people who do decorating for homes, and they show off how they arrange the plates. That's my favorite part of the exhibit, because my goodness, I didn't know there were rules for that. But you get, I grew up in Culver, we were doing mold ahead of plates, for heaven's sake. But you get those people in the same venue, they meet. And when people meet, you all know this, when people meet, they talk. When they talk, they tend to understand each other better. And allows us a little piece of bridging that divide. And it reminds us of our agricultural heritage, reminds us of the end of the Oregon Trail, reminds us of all the things that brought us or keeps us in Oregon. And I can't think of a more iconic thing that we could build around to reinvigorate our vision of a state, to understand where we've been, and to think collectively about where we can go based on that. It is a huge opportunity for us. I really urge you to pass this, urge you to talk to your colleagues about the bill, the importance of it, to make sure the fair remains viable. Because I think, as you've heard, it's not going to under its current process, and that's not a criticism of state's parks at all. It's an observation of government entities trying to do entrepreneurial things. Occasionally it works, but that's not the way to bet. And taking it into a different realm where you have the board of people involved who understand it from a business standpoint to make it profitable, that's exactly the right thing to do. I couldn't be more excited about this opportunity. I think it's one of the better bills I've seen come through this body in many years. I commend it to you. Please do talk to your colleagues. Please move it along with a due pass. Be glad to take any questions. Thank you so much.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. We have our last panel, unless there's other people out there that didn't write their name down. Ken, is it? Hope it's Similia?
Similia.
Thank you. That was easier. Thank you, Ken. Victoria Shin, Katie Cannon, and Dave Bowden? Or?
He's back.
Not a second bite.
So, I didn't read the writing right. So
that's all right. I have horrible handwriting.
Okay.
I'll admit to it.
Go ahead, whoever wants to start.
All right. My name is Ken Similia. I'm a resident of Salem, north of Market Street, just 3 blocks from the state fairgrounds. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. As a resident, I have some concerns, but I'm neutral on Senate Bill 7, and I have just received, or I did receive before the hearing, the Dash 2 amendments, and I've reviewed those some and have some comments on that. Most of what we've heard today has been, or the committee has heard, is about the business model. And I've been a resident in the Northeast Neighbors Neighborhood Association for 43 years, and in actually since 1943, but with a gap outside. So I'm very familiar with the state fair, how it's evolved over the years. It started out under the Department of Agriculture. It morphed into a commission form and then State Parks and Rec. And so we, as a resident, I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly of some of the things that have happened. Most of it is good. 90% of what happens at the Oregon State Fair is positive, and I'm very pleased to be able to be within walking distance. Our Northeast Neighbors Neighborhood Association will actually be meeting this evening. We meet twice a month, and we'll be discussing this subject as an association board with some concerns. Some of the concerns we have, for example, in the early days, the state fair was a farm before it became a fair in the County Fair Association. Of course, there was a farm there, and I understand there may be some deed restrictions on at least how part of that land can be used if it ever went out of state fair use. But in any event, the southern part that borders on the Northeast Neighbors Neighborhood Association, about a mile from the Union Pacific tracks out to 24th Street, we are on the last stretch of a Camas Prairie, if you will, in the state of Oregon. That was pasture land. It was never plowed and farmed as a cropland. And shortly you're going to see around, I've done some surveys, and when the native camas blooms there, there's about 240,000 purple plants. You'll see a field of purple there. We would like to see that stay open space. And there's some discussion in some of the long-range state fair plans of, well, let's sell off some of the excess land and develop it, whether it's apartments or other zoned uses. Neighbors who have been there for many decades now have concerns about how the land might be used. One of the sections in Senate Bill 7 talks about the council representatives. The Dash 2 added additional numbers on there. And from 7 to 11, maximum of the 13 represent business-type interests or industries that have been traditionally served. While a city mayor or manager might be a non-voting member, there's nothing that represents the residential people on all four sides of the fair where livability is a concern. And so we're concerned that maybe one of those spots should be dedicated to the stakeholders who live there and have to see parking problems, if there's a heavy weekend usage, noise problems. Before the city adopted a noise ordinance, we had 110 decibel sounds coming out of the LB Day Amphitheater at the edge of the fairgrounds. We don't want to see that native Camas Prairie destroyed. So there are livability issues. I'd like to see this bill address that with more than just an advisory representation from a city manager or an elected official who doesn't even have to be from Salem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Katie Cannon. I was the director of marketing at the Oregon State Fair and Expo Center from 1989 to 1994, the interim director from 94 to 95, and then I was the director from 2000 to 2005. I first want to thank Lisa and Andrea for working with Senator Courtney's office to put this legislation together. I work for Don, and we worked together on this 20 years ago, so I'm glad to see this finally getting pushed through. And Lisa and Andrea have done a wonderful job on this particular bill. I want to let you know I do support it wholeheartedly, Senate Bill 7 with the Dash 2 amendments. I do want to caution the committee a little bit because I think it may take longer than what we think to get it off the ground. We are looking at a volunteer board with probably limited experience in this field. A manager maybe has experience, maybe not, and then you have employees that are probably going to go to parks because of their retirement and benefits. So this is going to be very stressful the first few years, and I hope that the legislature and the governor will support that, and it needs support financially until it's off the ground, but I do believe that it really will work. I want to, there were a few things, some things have been caught. The Dash 2 amendments took care of some big things I was concerned about. One thing that's not been mentioned is to any length is the condition of the facilities, and I think Parks has done an analysis that there's $20 million worth of repairs that need to be done, and that does not include electrical, HVAC, or plumbing. So you can, that's an increased figure from that. And that, so don't be surprised if this council does come back, because I think it's unrealistic to expect them to do all the, that kind of maintenance in a short period of time, plus get up and running and everything. So they may be back. I was glad to see that you're not going to make the two board members sign all the checks, because that one just sent me into a panic. And also, I agree that you probably want a multiple-year budget, but please do not ask them to do it on a July 1 start date. That is like horrible for the state fair. It cuts your some of your expenses in half and all your revenues on one side. They need, leave that up to the board. Let them give you a multiple year budget, but please allow it to be on a calendar year if they so choose.
Thank you.
And if you have any further questions.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, I'm Victoria Shin, a longtime Salem resident and currently work for U.S. Bank, but I'm here on behalf of really a concerned citizen and community member. I've worked for U.S. Bank for over 25 years, currently housed at Ladenbush Bank, which I sweat the history part, and I really want to speak from my heart. You have my testimony in front of you, but I'm very passionate about the state fair. Long-time roots in Salem. We are fourth generation. My one grandfather came across in the wagon train, settled in Aurora Colonies. Second grandfather, it was the president of Oregon State University, at that time was the Agriculture College, for 25 years in the early 1900s. And I share that with you because I'm trying to carry on that tradition of really deep community involvement. My grandfather, my dad's side, Bob Shin, started Willamette Cherry Growers, which is a neighbor in the backyard of the Oregon State Fair. We spent countless hours. I always wanted to grow up on a farm. The closest I was ever going to get was going to the fair, and we spent many, many hours at the racetracks, in the animal barns, you know, looking at the plate exhibit that was just mentioned earlier, and also spending time with my mother and sister hours at the horse shows. And what really was disconcerting to me the last 25 years is the decline of the annual events. And in talking to the horse show participants, which we had regional shows, a lot of national contenders that were there, you know, exciting people that we would chat and say, why are you not coming back? And they said, the State Fair Board doesn't care about us anymore. They want us out of here. They've been trying to push us out for years. And I thought, that doesn't make any sense to me. And so when Lisa, I was introduced to her a few weeks ago, and Andrea, what a breath of fresh air. I mean, I know this has been a topic of conversation for years, but I think as citizens have mentioned today and addressed the economic viability and the concerns that need to be considered as this bill moves forward, and I would hope that you would support it, we can bring those people back. We can make this viable. We can, the Northgate community, I think, you know, I envision this entrance into Salem, the entrance into Northgate, revitalize that Portland Road area, which is in the urban renewal area. It's not a Salem event. It's the heritage of Oregon. It's supporting the agriculture. I had worked when Jackie Winters had first booth at the State Fair. I learned of that, and I said, Jackie, can I work for you? You don't even need to pay me. I just love being at the fair. And she looked at me and said, laughed and said, you can work for us, but I will pay you for being there. And so I did that for several years, and I absolutely loved it. I started working out there, you know, in junior high school when you still could, and it created that work ethic and those 12-hour-long work days and all of that excitement. So, you know, in wrapping up my testimony, I really believe wholeheartedly that if this bill moves through and we have the economic viability based on what this is proposing, the State Fair and the Expo Center year-round can thrive if it's run by individuals who have the education background, the knowledge in running a profitable business and events, the positive impact it will have for a viable fair and expo to continue in Salem provides that strong economic impact for local community as well as regional and statewide for generations to come. The downside of the continued financial instability of the Fair and Exposition Center is the complete loss of year-round economic viability. It's a loss of our heritage and our future. And in conclusion, as a concerned citizen, a Salem resident, and a business person who's looking for the modern-day viability of the State Fair and Expo Center, I urge you to consider
passing and supporting the Senate Bill 7.
Thank you.
Senator Roblin and committee, I'm Diane Bowden. I own the Cotton Patch in Kaiser, Oregon, and somehow I ended up as the chair of the quilting committee for the state fair. I kind of sat there with this blank look on my face at me, but as a wife of a United States Marine for the last 30 years, I've learned to put up or shut up. And I wanted to see the state fair change how they looked at quilting. Quilting, to me, is my passion. I've been sewing since I was 5, but quilting brings in, it's kind of the star of the fair. It brings you in, it makes you look, it makes you wonder about the possibilities, and also that we have these wonderful quilters out there that support so many charities. We have pillowcases we give to terminally ill children. There are our comfort quilts there for the dying. There's the quilts of valor, which is near and dear to my heart. We have so many things that quilters do. We're not a bunch of little old ladies with our socks rolled down around our ankles, bitching, excuse me. Marine Corps wife, sorry. But anyway, what the Bill 7 with its add-ons does is that it gives an opportunity for the fair to flourish, and that's what it needs to do. I'm passionate also about the fair. I lived in Alaska, and I was a scribe for the Alaska State Fair and also helped at the rides and all those things and was locked in with a hornet, but it was a horrible story, and I won't go on. But anyway, what the fair means to so many quilters is that we get to show our work, and we get to show it in a safe atmosphere where people can walk through and say, look at that. I never thought you could do that with cloth, and get to meet these wonderfully talented women and men that quilt, that take a piece of cloth and fold it and manipulate it into this beautiful thing that covers us and warms us. It's something that I think can really take off, and I am, since I've become the quilting chairman, I guess I've become the cheerleader of quilting, but I think the whole fair and seeing the creative arts and listening to other people who are artists, like our photographer friend there, who I thought really kicked it, but everyone gets to see the fine arts that we do, and it brings people together and gets them to start a dialogue. And one of the nicest things, too, is to see the junior division flourish, and that's something that kind of died last year. I was one of the judges last year for the quilting, and by the time I walked out of there, I didn't want to see another quilt, not because they weren't beautiful, but because I was tired, and it was not the way it should be. We need scribes, and we need some other things, and we need our quilts down so we can see them, and we're doing that, and I'm so proud of the gals that work on the committee with me. And the State Fair folks have been awesome to work with. If you had a question, they're easy to access. And Andrea's done a wonderful job facilitating, and I don't have to write mean notes across the counter to people. Tony's awesome, and then I get to work with Kim a lot, and we're getting a bunch of sponsors, and that's something I think also that they see us thrive as a community. There's lots of Northwest quilting companies and manufacturers that are actually, within a 200-mile radius that I think we can get into the fair, and maybe we can do something else, too, on those other days. So I strongly recommend that you support number 7 with Dash 2, and thank you very much.
Any questions for this panel? No? Thank you very much. And that was everybody who signed up, so I'm going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 7. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 7. Senator Bertsugger.
Okay, when he finds his glasses.
Okay. I'll let you borrow mine, but I need them.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 329-7 on Senate Bill 7.
Senator Bertsugger moves the Dash 2 amendments dated 329-13. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any opposition?
Nope.
Seeing none. So ordered. Senator Bertsugger.
Okay. Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 7 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Bertsugger moves Senate Bill 7 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and to be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, we're going to do a roll call vote on this one.
Mm.
Yeah. had a question.
Aye.
Senator Close.
Aye.
Senator Pozanski.
Aye.
Vice Chair Rick Chipper.
Yes.
Chair Roblin.
Aye. Motion passes, and we don't have to assign. It's going to Ways and Means.
Yep.
So we'll let it go to there. We don't have all the work on 6, right? So we'll call that, we'll move, carry that over to Thursday. And that is Senate Bill 605 will be carried over.
Are we done with amendments on 605? I mean, the dash 2, is that where we got more coming?
I think that's it. It's getting the fiscal for the dash 2.
Thanks.
So is and so we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 7. Anything else? Don't see anything. Thank you all for taking the time. Thank you all for coming and being a part of the presentation today. And we will close our Committee on Rural Communities and Economic Development. Thank you.